Welcome aboard, you people. Starship Rokan Show. For half a day of broadcast insolence right here. And congratulations to the White Sox. Again, that's going to be an amazing season. All right. The one thing you need to know at 5 o'clock is that the coronavirus is totally under control. The vice president stepped to the microphones. And actually, what they did do today is a very good idea, which is they're going to extend the testing. They think they have enough kits. They want immediate testing of people across the board. So that, more details on that a little bit later on in the program, but that is the good news out of today, which is that there seems to be a much more coordinated and larger response to this. At the same time that the Chicago Public Schools are announcing that any kid who gets sick, they're sending home immediately. And the question is, how's that going to work out? So that's these are the two things about the coronavirus you need to know today. And the other national story you need to know today is that Mike Bloomberg packed up his bags. Who knew that this guy seemed, when you just saw the commercials, he seemed like an affable guy, like, nice billionaire. It turns out he was like the Monopoly man. Here is the Rokan Show Mighty Art Players tribute to Michael Bloomberg.
You know, the debates aren't really where the public is focused. There's an awful lot of attention on other things. Their ratings keep going down, and probably after impeachment's off the table, they'll even go down more. I don't think the debates really matter that much. It's good entertainment.
If I go back and look at my time in office, the one thing that I'm really worried about, embarrassed about, was how it turned out with Stop and Frisk.
Mayor Bloomberg, your campaign has said that you would eventually release your tax records. Why should Democratic voters have to wait?
It just takes us a long time. Unfortunately or fortunately...
Oh, could I comment on that?
Fortunately, we are preparing it. The number of pages will probably be in the thousands of pages. I can't go to TurboTax.
Mr. Mayor, are you willing to release all of those women from those non-disclosure agreements?
There's agreements between two parties that wanted to keep it quiet, and that's up to them. They signed those agreements, and we'll live with it.
It's up to you, New York.
Rokan Show, 720 WGN, our discussion with Charlie Beck, the acting Chicago police superintendent, comes your way in less than 20 minutes. And Mr. Richard Roper is going to be here after 6 o'clock. The coronavirus has actually moved the release of the new James Bond movie back. It's also screwing with Mulan. Mulan might have gotten the Wuhan. We'll explain exactly what happened there. That's crazy. Plus, our personal Black Hawk, Connor Murphy, will be here as well. All right. Last night, this is one of the craziest turnarounds I've ever seen in national politics. Within 72 hours, the guy who was dead in the water, Joe Biden, has now become the odds-on favorite to be the Democratic nominee for president of the United States. A.B. Stoddard, who we check in with quite often, is standing by on the Super Celebrity Hotline. And have you ever seen anything like this, A.B.?
No, I really still can't believe it. I can't believe the breadth, the numbers, the speed. I just can't believe that he won South Carolina by 29 points, and that propelled such a massive sweep last night.
So what do you account for that? Because he won states he hasn't even been in. This year, but maybe ever.
Well, I think we know. I think that we have been watching this contest where nothing was coalescing. It looked like people didn't like their choices. Everyone was divided up around a huge divided field. And there was this energy, right, on the left that everyone said was driving the primary electorate, driving the Democratic Party. and their politics. And we saw in the last couple of weeks that it really wasn't a Sanders revolution. He was getting a small plurality like Trump in 2016, while the rest of the field was opposed to him, but just dividing up between the candidates. Joe Biden did terribly in all the three first contests. He had no money. He was just written off for dead, is the cliche we're all using today. But a massive win in South Carolina really told us that African-American voters who were not represented by the first three contests are as pragmatic as we talked about a year ago. It's what they were telling us. A Trump second term is an existential threat to them. They truly believe it's an apocalyptic event, and they will do anything. They were ready to support Mike Bloomberg. Damn stop and frisk and everything else if Biden didn't recover. And so the lift in South Carolina propelled all these late-breaking voters who were looking for that winner to vote for him yesterday.
So the Bernie Sanders thing, I think it needs to be finally said. This whole idea, you just put your finger on it, A.B. Stoddard, that he didn't really have that many people. But by comparison to all the other folks, all the Democratic voters who are coming out, and there does seem to be a certain amount of enthusiasm coming out. You're seeing increased numbers in suburban, in college-educated suburban communities, right? That was the secret sauce that both sides here are going to fight for, that the Trump campaign's going to go fight for, that he seemed to have lost in his first 6 months of the presidency, and that they voted for him more than they voted for Hillary in 2016, or just about even. But he needs. But if Trump's going to get reelected, he is going to need those people to come back. Because if he loses them in great numbers, then that's going to be a very, very tough situation, because it's such a thin margin in those industrialized states, whether it's Wisconsin or Michigan or Pennsylvania, right? So North Carolina. So this is a totally different makeup here. And Bernie never really had the kind of momentum that I think he was telling everybody that he had. And yes, he's got a lot of younger people. If you look at it, 18 to 24 year olds or 18 to 30 year olds, he's got a higher percentage than any other Democrat. But as we know, and this is an unfortunate reality, 18 to 30 year olds don't vote. Even if they voted, even if every one of them who voted yesterday or whatever, all the people who were coming out from in the primary, that's a very small percentage, isn't it, of the total electorate?
If you're ready for my rant, Ro,
okay.
The Bernie Sanders entire theory of the case was that he was more electable. This nutty sounding communist, authoritarian loving socialist revolutionary was going to be the most electable because he was going to create a new electorate. He was going to galvanize a whole set of non-voters and bring them in. Yes, he gets non-voters. The only thing I've been impressed by is his ability to galvanize Latino voters. But his numbers have been pathetic. The district he won in Iowa, the first state where he sort of shared the victory but ultimately went to Mayor Pete, turnout improved by 1% in the districts in the precincts that he won. In New Hampshire, both Amy and Pete doubled him. More than 2-1 brought in the number of new voters than Sanders, who had just blown out New Hampshire in 2016 and left a ground game there and a passionate following. His numbers tell the story. He doesn't have a new electorate. Yes, Biden, as the presumptive nominee, will have to win over some young voters, but Biden is winning the bulk of the women you talked about, the suburban college-educated whites who propelled Democrats to victory in the midterms. He's winning non-college whites in the Democratic Party, and he's winning African-Americans. And so that makes up a coalition that wins the nomination and might be able to win the presidency if he can bring some young people around by the fall. But the calculation that voters are making is we'll have to leave Bernie's youngsters behind if we must, because the appeal and the depth of Biden's coalition is obviously, it's the safe pick. The most electable combination of voters.
A.B., before we let you go, can the Trump campaign try to win them? Is there a way into them by way of Trump? Because he does have, you know, not the healthcare for all necessarily, but he's got, you know, he's a populist. He's basically the other side of the coin from Bernie.
As he berates Joe Biden the rest of the year for being a socialist, which Joe Biden is not, I wonder how he'll appeal to Bernie's socialist followers. But I know he'll try everything, that's for sure. And Facebook is a powerful platform,
yeah,
especially with this information. So
let me ask you,
I'm
how
not
you
say it can't be done.
A.B. Stoddard, how does the coronavirus play into this in terms of your thinking on it?
Right. Well, I think that, look, the White House is really creating a very good show of force. The president likes optics, so meeting with nursing homes, meeting with the airlines, having daily press briefings with a lot of people standing up, sounding serious, especially with Dr. Fauci, our leading infectious disease expert. All of that is the right thing to do. But you can tell the president is hung up on this talking point about how the nation wasn't prepared for testing. And as soon as we test more people, the numbers are really going to explode. That's the fear. And so he's hung up on this issue. They're trying to address it. And I think that I think they can actually get through this in terms of a credibility crisis that everyone was feeling, you know, a week ago. I really do. But he gets in his own way, as he always does. He's not a patient man. He believes he controls things. He can't control Mother Nature and the coronavirus. And so today he's like, you know, doing back to his sort of Obama fetish about making up a story about Obama messed up the testing. It's what he does. And so I think that if he can control himself, the markets will calm down eventually and people will accept that this is kind of like a bad flu outbreak, if that's what we're dealing with. But yeah. The problem is that we weren't ready to test, and all the experts are telling us we haven't done enough testing, and he doesn't like that.
Okay, well, then they're going to get that done. Dow was up 1,200 points today, by the way, if you're just getting in your car and didn't look at that. It has just been such a wild ride, just back and forth, whipsawing back and forth. A.B. Stoddard, thank you very much.
The Wall Street was worried about Sanders, too. That and the coronavirus was too much for Wall Street to take.
Oh, yeah, there's no question about
that. Last week.
There was no question. They were worried about Elizabeth Warren. They were worried about Bernie Sanders. They were worried about a socialist revolution in America. We're all going to wear those green, like, everybody's going to dress like Che Guevara. Everybody has to have a Che Guevara t-shirt. I mean, I'm like, I was watching this and I'm like, who is this old hippie? Right? I mean, how was he able to get everybody's attention the way he's getting it? And I'm like, yeah, this guy doesn't make any sense. And I think you and I both think that the Democratic Party was capable of completely stepping on their own junk here and screwing everything up. And somehow, some way,
they let Sanders rise. They did not. They let him clean up in caucuses, out organize everybody. They let him rise.
Well, they didn't keep up.
I think, but for the intervention of Jim Clyburn, it would have been a disaster.
Yeah, very interesting. Wow. May we live in interesting times, A.B. Stoddard. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
All right. There we go. Okay, that's your look at the nation right there. And as I just mentioned, the Dow did go up 1,173 today. And it's not exactly making up for everything that happened last week, but it does have, there is a sense as we're going through this week that the Dow's trying. It really wants to, the investors and the people who buy into the equities in the United States, and that's from all over the world. They're looking for a safe haven. And if you want to look in Europe or you want to look in China, the slowdowns in both of those regions, the potential industrial slowdowns, are more severe than they appear to be here at this moment. So this is a good place for people to go. So it is a little bit of that. I think it's mostly that. And there is some of the Bernie Sanders effect, because if you have Bernie Sanders versus Donald Trump, it's not exactly an investor's dream. If all of a sudden we already have a deficit problem as it is, and now we've got these really low interest rates, and you know you're hoping that's going to spur and keep the economics of this country moving. However, there is one issue, which is if it doesn't, there's not really a whole lot of places you can go to set that fire again. The matches are getting very wet here, to extend the analogy. So we will see. All right, coming up on the program, Charlie Beck, the interim Chicago police chief, police superintendent, is going to be joining us. And this is an interview that was recorded about an hour ago, and we were able to get him to comment on all of the things that he was that happened today, all the things that we've been talking about for the last couple of days. He commented on the Richards Bar incident. He comments on the two police officers who've now been stripped of their police powers after that video was released of them shooting an unarmed suspect in the Red Line station in Grand Avenue last week. So all of that kind of coming together here is going to be these are the top stories of policing. He also comments on how downtown can get fixed. So it's really interesting conversation that we have with Charlie Beck. So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, we have got the news with Kim Gordon for the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Bro Con Show, 720 WGN right here. About an hour ago, I sat down with acting Chicago Police Superintendent Charlie Beck. And there was news breaking right at that moment that the two police officers who were shot, who shot an unarmed man at the Grand Avenue Red Line station, have now been relieved of their police duties. Here's his reaction.
Well, you know, that, of course, the investigation is just begun on that, and there's a lot more to be done, and I want to make sure that's a caveat on everything I say. But my initial review of the shooting and the reports that and video that I saw from detectives lead me to believe that, at least on his face, it's a very substandard shooting. Because of that, I'm going to leave the officers of their police powers pending the outcome of the investigation.
And then that gets handled by the civilian police board?
Yes. Okay. Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Mm-hmm. The remainder of the, it gets handled on two tracks. The civilian police board handles the administrative piece of the investigation, but then we are working with the state attorney and the FBI on the criminal side of the investigation.
Got it. One other story, too, that's been capturing the attention of Chicago is this killing outside of Richard's Bar. And a lot of people are asking, I'm asking specifically, how it is that when the now suspect in that case was apprehended by the brother of the victim, arrested by your guys, taken into custody for 48 hours, how did he get cut loose for that period of time? I know he's now back in custody, but can you take us through what goes on there?
Well, absolutely. You have to have a case put together in a very, very short amount of time when somebody's in custody within 48 hours so that the state's attorney can charge the case. And there were some holes in the case that needed to be filled. And the state's attorney asked us to do some additional investigation. So while that was going on, the subject was released. And then, there was some work between the detectives and the attorney to get him back into custody. But he's in custody now, and the case is proceeding. I think that once in a while, and it certainly isn't always the case, but there is just more investigation that needs to be done before you can get a case together within 48 hours.
Okay,
and that's just the reality of the system.
I understand. Let's get to the more broad issues here. Obviously, you've stepped into this job, been here a couple of months. It's an interim position. You've got new eyes on the problem, and that's one of the things I'd love to pick your brain on. What do you see here that maybe we have been missing thus far?
Well, I think that I think I see a number of things, and I'll start with some really good things. You have a really good police department in that it has good people that are dedicated to Chicago that want to do the right thing. By and large, obviously there's those that fall short of that, but we can deal with that. As long as the vast majority are hardworking people that believe in quality law enforcement, so that you have that, and we also have some really good technology. And the CPD has worked very hard with the city to put these technology centers together in almost all of the districts and in all of the areas to make good use of the cameras throughout Chicago and the ShotSpotter network. And I have to tell you, there's been, since I've been here, there's been some amazingly good police work done. We have far too many cases, I will say that, but the cases that we do have, detectives and patrol officers work diligently on and have turned some really big cases around in a very short amount of time with positive results. And so I think those are some good things. We've been hampered by our structure for a number of years. The structure, the organizational structure of CPD is very old school policing with some siloed compartments that don't reflect community policing, In other words, there are detective functions that aren't tied to geography, and you know I want to do what I can to tie as many of those things to geography. But I truly believe that the vast majority of policing is very local, and you know the better you know the police in your neighborhoods, the easier you can work with them, and the better the quality of the product, and the more tied to neighborhoods cops feel. So I think that's really important, and so we've done that. We're in progress of doing that.
All right. On the other side, Charlie Beck will discuss with us what can be done to stop the downtown crime that is not just plaguing the residents, but also scaring the tourists. We'll talk about that on the other side with Acting Police Superintendent Charlie Beck. But first, here's Kim Gordon. All right, we're talking to Charlie Beck, and we're talking about the police department and how he is. Charlie Beck, of course, is the interim Chicago Police Superintendent. And it's interesting. We talked to him about an hour ago, and it's interesting that he was able to look at the city of Chicago and policing here in a very different way. He comes from Los Angeles, and he's new eyes on this problem. And he immediately got here, and he decided he needed to restructure how the police detectives and other police white shirts, as they're called, some of the commanders, are distributed throughout the city.
It's not only so much where they sit, it's who they report to, because many of them sat in fairly close geography. Of course, there was only three areas, and now we're going to go to five in April. And some of those detectives will still be in the areas because it's going to take a little bit of time to move them down into the district. But the difference, the big difference is that who they report to. And they're going to report to those area deputy chiefs and the district commanders who have geographic responsibility instead of to the chief of detectives who has citywide responsibility and is not as, he can't possibly be as tied to the various communities of Chicago because if they have the whole city that they're responsible to. So it's really about giving all the authority for investigations from the 911 call response, to the final prosecution, to those districts and areas, so that they have the complete package of policing to deliver to those communities that hold them responsible. You know, that when a community has a crime issue or a neighborhood issue or any policing issue, they go right to their district. That's what they look to, the district commander.
So
if you don't give that person the tools to come to a solution, then how can you hold them responsible?
That's interesting because 20 years ago we did have five areas in Chicago, five policing areas. And
yes,
now, and they went down to three, basically central, north, and south. And was that too big, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think that I want them to spread it down into the 22 districts because I think the closer you can put cops to their community, the better the quality of police. You know, and the more connection that they have to the community. Everybody, whenever I talk to people in Chicago, they say, well, you know, can we get the beat cops back? You know, we want to know who our police are. And one of the core things I believe in policing is that the more an area needs police, in other words, the more impacted they are by crime, the more they want to know who they are. Because they have a bond with them, and you don't want to go to another professional at random. You know, when you pick your doctor, you don't pick them at random, and you don't rotate them.
Yeah.
You want to go to the same person all the time. Your tax person, your barber, everybody. You want to go to the same person all the time. We all do, and that should be the way that you think about your police department. I live in the 11th district. The 11th district cops are my cops. And that's what we're trying to create. And so there's a number of programs, not only the reorganization, but the district coordination officers, the DCO officers that we're going to spread throughout the department are going to be exactly that. They're going to be those beat cops that everybody knows, that they have contact ability through cell phones and email, and you can talk to them about your neighborhood problems. So they're not your 911 cops. They're your long-term quality of life issue cops, and they're going to be a huge boon to the community of Chicago. People are going to feel connected to their cops.
Acting Police Superintendent Charlie Beck, as we were talking to right before I let you go, I want to ask you about downtown crime. Obviously, the business
Sure.
leaders, downtown Michigan Avenue, Gold Coast, those areas, Is there a change in the tactics because they realize that they're going to be able to find softer, more rich targets and be able to get out of the scene faster? I mean, that seems to be what the strategy is for the bad guys.
Well, and that's what we've seen in a couple of the stores, with the, a couple of the car, the vehicle-related crimes. And so, you know, we are, and it isn't a lot of people that are doing these crimes. It's several crews, and we've made some good progress in making arrests. You know, just since the vehicle hijacking task force started, they've made 19 arrests for vehicle hijacking, and that's only been 2 weeks. So they're making some big impact. You know, we're working with the stores, especially the high-end stores that have easily stolen goods on display, you know, to make the target tougher so that, mm-hmm. that it is not an easy pick, you know. So we want to make sure that we do all of that and then that we follow up relentlessly on this stuff. You know, this is certainly crimes that impact, you know, the broad majority of people that live in Chicago, crimes or crimes at highly recognized retail venues. You know, we want to make sure those are safe, and we're going to put the resources in there to make sure they're not.
You're going to go back to L.A. at some point here, and
at some point, I definitely am going to go back to L.A. Although I do love Chicago. It's a great city.
Well, thank you for saying that, but I do know that Mrs. Beck is requesting to go back to L.A. We always hear that. So,
yeah, but well, that's because it's very true.
So a year from the day you leave here, what would you hope would change or be better in the Chicago Police Department?
Well, I hope that, I believe that Chicago and it, the people of Chicago and their police department feel more connected. You know, I think that's what's been lacking, you know, is that strong connection between the police department and its people, which I find kind of shocking, because the people of Chicago are very proud of their city. You know, I tell folks all the time, you know, if you ask a person who lives in Los Angeles where they're from, they'll say, oh, you know, I'm from Brentwood, or I'm from Tarzana, or I'm from, you know, they name the neighborhood that they live in, even though it's a part of the city of Los Angeles. But you ask somebody from any neighborhood in Chicago where they live, they say Chicago, because they're proud of the city. So I want to be proud of the police department just like that. Right. And so we're trying to put things together so that that happens. And, you know, I also want to see the department as well on its way to completing its requirements via the consent decree. You know, we're making progress on getting that set up so we'll succeed. You know, it's going to be tough. You know, we're not going to be certainly in full compliance in the immediate future, but the organization will be set up to get there, and I think that's really important.
Interesting couple of months for you. Thank you for doing what you've done here, because you stepped in a really difficult period of time. We've had outsiders and we've had insiders, and generally, I think, as you know, the outside police superintendents have come in. There's a squeeze on them, and it seems like the department reacted to you in a really, really positive way. So thank you for what you've done so far, and let's just hope that we find a good person and we're able to be more successful in the years to come.
Well, I think you will. You know, you have a great public safety mayor. She is totally invested in finding a good superintendent. And I know she will. You know, and I appreciate your comments. I feel very connected to not only Chicago, but the cops in Chicago Police Department. You know, they've had a very tough time. And if I can help them to get on the right path, to be what they want to be, and to be what Chicago wants them to be, then I will be consider myself successful.
All right, Charlie Beck, Acting Police Superintendent, Chicago Police Department. Thank you so much for being with us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. That was Charlie Beck from about an hour ago. When we return after the news at the top of the hour, I must tell you this story. It does appear that the Wuhan virus might have just killed James Bond. We will explain exactly what that means. This to me is of all the things that can happen. They've closed businesses and done all these crazy things, but this is one of the wackiest decisions I have seen Hollywood make. We'll talk about it on the other side.
That I've fallen for a lie. You were never on my
This is the theme to the new Bond film, No Time to Die, which was scheduled to be released in the United States on April 12th. And Richard Roper's about to tell us that that ain't going to happen now, is it?
No. It has been pulled from theaters. Really rare for a film of this, you know, this magnitude, this huge of a film, for it to be pulled from theaters. Not pulled from theaters, but pulled from the scheduled release. It's all about the fears about the coronavirus, of course, and that's Billie Eilish. I hope she's still relevant by the time the song comes out. These kids today, I'm sure she will be.
But they're talking about a November release.
They're looking at a November release right now for No Time to Die. I mean, you can't help but note the irony of a title of a movie called No Time to Die, and it's not the first, but it's the biggest in a series of, and obviously there are more important aspects of this, but the entertainment business and the industry is really being roiled by this in more ways than one. If you look at, for example, Mulan, which is the live-action reboot of the Disney classic, which is from Disney. Now, that's scheduled for a March 27th release in North America, which is still on, but it's already been canceled in China. Along with a lot of pretty much every theater in China has already been shut down, movie theater we're talking about, not to mention theme parks, et cetera, have been closed since late January, I believe.
Now, that's going to cost a huge amount of money to the studio, right?
Tremendous amount, because, you know, like, and I think
Mulan is huge in Asia.
Yeah, and it's, wow, this is a, you know, a hugely anticipated film. It's PG-13 live action, so it was really supposed to be some, and we'll still see. I'm not sure, and I don't know. I don't have inside information to tell you that Disney won't release it here in the States on March 27th. I wouldn't be surprised if they held on to it, because let's say it didn't do great business, which I think it will, but let's say it didn't do great business in the States opening weekend. They wouldn't be able to point to the surefire. They were guaranteed it was going to make probably $400 million globally.
On
the opening weekend. And, you know, a lot of times you'll see that with these big action movies and tentpole type films, where the studio will be able to say, listen, well, you know, yes, it only, quote unquote, made $38 million or $47 million here in the States, but worldwide it made $300 million. It's a huge global hit. You don't get to put that spin on things or point the big picture out if there is no big picture to point out.
So this, they've already made this decision about April 12th in the United States.
For No Time to Die,
for the James Bond movie, that they're pulling it from release on that date. They're pulling it from release. It's going to go a week earlier in London. There was going to be a gigantic where the royal family was going to be at the premiere. I mean, it's a crazy thing. I don't think Meghan Markle was going to be there, but everybody else in the royal family is supposed to be there. It seems that this is the kind of indication of economic slowdowns that are the ones that have been roiling the markets, too, because all of a sudden the theater exhibitors now are going to get hit because movies are not going to be released and they're going to be sitting on movies for 2 weeks, even if the coronavirus isn't a gigantic thing here.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And in the case for, you know, No Time to Die, you think about, as you mentioned, Ro, tens of millions, if not, you know, nine figures have already been spent on the marketing for that film. Everything from, as you mentioned, the London premiere, Daniel Craig, the host of Saturday Night Live. You and I had already we had locked in an in-person Chicago interview with one of the major stars of the film that was going to take place next week, which I should let you know right now on the air. That's not going to be taking place, Rob.
We're
not going to get that particular. Well, I mean, hopefully we'll be able to do it down the road. And these are relatively smaller things, but yeah, the ripple effect, and unfortunately, for a lot of the theater owners, that profit margin isn't that huge. When you start losing, they depend on these big blockbuster movies. And you know what's going to happen here. It's not going to happen with No Time to Die. It's not going to happen with Mulan. But I guarantee you, there are a lot of studios right now looking at mid-size and even Oscar bait type films, saying, maybe we should rethink this, maybe put it in one theater or two theaters in New York and L.A. and talk to some of our streaming giant friends about a new partnership and get these movies out. I wouldn't be surprised if you see that in the months to come, where you're going to see some pretty big movies almost exclusively debuting on streaming platforms, because the reality is, for a lot of people, they're going to go, well, we could stay home.
Right.
And we could watch Netflix or Disney Plus,
this is the best
or
thing
Apple
ever for
TV
Netflix.
Plus or Amazon Prime, I mean, or HBO. All these other, you know, types of platforms, and just watch the movies that way.
All right, Richard Roper, we'll talk about the movies that are in the theaters that people are now worried about going to, coming up right after we check in with Kim Gordon. It's the Rokan Show right here on 720 WGN. All right, Richard Roper is in. Oh, wait, hold on. Before we do that, I must tell you something.
There's some important stuff to tell us, please.
March is truck month over at Apple Chevrolet in Tinley Park, and they're packed to the gills with the 2020 trucks, and they're pricing them to go. Right now, qualified buyers are going to receive 0% APR for 72 months on the all-new 2020 Chevy Silverado 1500 Crew Cab. That's 6 years at 0% APR. You're going to get $500 cash allowance when you finance with GM Financial. And we all know the Chevy Silverado is the most dependable, longest-lasting, full-size truck on the road. Chevy Silverado's Drive Mode Selector lets you select tow and haul, snow and ice, or off-road to match any condition. So if you've been thinking it's time to upgrade your truck, get over to Apple Chevrolet. You're dealing with the Time Magazine National Dealer of the Year, John Alfirovich. Plus, Dustin Hightower, Randy Ramos, and all the folks at Apple Chevy are the best in the business. You can trust me on that. You're going to love the entire experience. You can trust me on that as well. Apple Chevrolet, 8585 West 159th Street in Tinley Park, or applechevy.com. Find new roads.
Tonight, priceless home movies lost, maybe forever. How to make sure it doesn't happen to you. WGN TV investigates tonight at 9. Speaking of movies, look who's here, guys. Richard Roper.
Thank you. Are you auditioning to be the booth announcer for the show?
I am, yeah. I'm just entertaining myself over here in the sports department.
Very much. And The Price is Right. I see Kev holding his hand to his ear like Gary Owen, like back in 1968.
Wow, that's interesting.
That was good, yeah.
The kids are...
Brillo, for all your cleaning needs.
The kids have been sent to their room. Yeah. Is exactly what
Brought
happened.
To you by Taster's Choice.
Yeah, Kevin, I'm so bored. You should come on down.
God, a lot of thing going on.
There. All right, yes. Let's talk about the movies that are coming out this weekend. And we just announced No Time to Die. If you didn't see this earlier, the James Bond movie that was coming out in about 5 weeks has been postponed because of the coronavirus internationally, because it was going to be a gigantic internet. These things make $1 billion internationally.
Yeah. So Daniel Craig hosting Saturday Night Live this Saturday. So I'm sure they're furiously rewriting some skits as we speak.
Oh, man.
Or maybe just seeing if John Mulaney's available again.
Right. You can't go wrong there. All right. The Banker.
Let's talk about The Banker. This is interesting. Folks might remember we talked a little bit about this film last November. We talk about all these streaming services that are becoming players. Apple Studios, their film studio branch, essentially, this was going to be their first feature-length film. It's a classic kind of Oscar bait story. It's based on the true story of two African-American entrepreneurs, one who is from the Deep South, one from Los Angeles, who were really starting to gobble up pieces of Los Angeles real estate and reselling things and buying banks. Were brilliant businessmen, but had a lot of trouble getting through the door when it came to getting loans from traditional white investors. So they found a white guy and trained him basically to be their doppelganger and go in and he'd get the loans and everything, but they were really the masterminds behind it. Fascinating story that eventually got into some trouble, but they also were credited with changing some housing practices, which led to legislation, you know, in the late 60s. The movie was pulled before it could hit theaters because the son of the Anthony Mackie character was a producer, credited producer on this film, and his sisters, who would be the children also of the Anthony Mackie character, talked about allegations of sexual abuse and said, this guy should not be producing a film. This film is not true to events. You're not even talking about his family life. So they pulled it. Now it's coming to theaters March 6th, and then it's going to be on streaming platform. With all due respect to that, the story is about these two guys, and like every other biopic ever, whether we're talking about something like Green Book and there was controversy there, it's a fictionalized story of it. And as such, it's really very entertaining because it's basically done like a heist film. You got these two guys who know all the ways to make a lot of money but need a white guy to front the operation.
Think about all the good we can do for the community.
Taking it to the man.
That's exactly what we're going to do.
And just how in the hell do you plan on pulling that off?
We get Matt to front for us.
You want me to what?
Be us to the rest of the world.
I don't know anything about banking. I don't know how to buy a bank.
We'll teach you everything you need to know.
The whole country's talking about how two Negroes managed to buy two banks full of white folks' money and loan it to other Negroes.
You should have known you couldn't keep this a secret very long.
FBI, you're under arrest.
A black man tries to bring other brothers up. That's intolerant.
Wow. And you can certainly recognize Samuel L. Jackson along with Anthony Mackie there. And it's interesting because it's a PG-13 movie. So Sam Jackson gets to use the F word only once and then actually has to say friggin' and effing. But I really like it. Three solid stars for the film. As I said, I know there's controversies around it, but that's really in terms of whether or not you should see this film. It's a very, in a lot of ways, very traditional film where you've got the anti-heroes, you got the snarling bad guys, and you have some, you know, valuable social lessons about life in Texas in the 50s and 60s.
And it's called The Banker. Where are you going to see it?
It's in theaters, right? It'll be in theaters starting Friday. It'll get a 2-week window in theaters, and then it'll be on your, if you're an Apple TV Plus subscriber.
Yes.
Which, by the way, and I've talked to a few people about this recently, you might have an Apple TV Plus subscription and not know it, because a lot of times if you bought a phone or renewed a plan or something like that, so look into that if you don't know if you have it or not. You might already have it. Look into it.
I bought it. I bought them all. I pay more money for my television now, just to fuel my television, than I did for like my first apartment. It's crazy.
Yeah, and I think all of us, if we sat down, there are ways we could probably trim the bill. And
I just don't know how.
Because I know when I'm clicking around, you'll come across a big-time movie like, you know, Avengers Endgame, and then two clicks later, you're getting Avengers Endgame in Spanish, and then you're getting Avengers Endgame in Chinese, and I probably don't need the other versions.
Yeah, that's probably true. I don't know how you do it.
Three stars for The Banker.
Okay. Let's talk about Spencer Confidential, speaking of streaming, because Mark Wahlberg and Peter Berg, who have they have gotten together on Deepwater Horizon and Patriot's Day and Lone Survivor, Mile 22, all really well-done films.
Yes,
right?
Yes. They've teamed up for a lot of these movies. I mean, Peter Berg is an actor-turned-director. He did the movie of Friday Night Lights and then the TV show. So if you know that kind of, he always has the camera moving about, very stylish, very cool. And three of the four films you mentioned were based on serious real-life incidents. One, you know, the Boston Marathon, Deepwater Horizon, Lone Survivor was a military film. This is pure fiction. Some folks out there might remember a 1980s series called Spencer for Hire. Remember Robert Urich and I can't remember his name, but it was based on a series of novels by Robert B. Parker. So he was kind of this urbane detective, right? Well, this is based on the same character, but it's completely different because it's a Mark Wahlberg, Peter Berg movie. I love this film. It is completely ridiculous. It's super violent. It's the most Boston movie you're ever going to see. There's like a cop Irish bar named Slancha, which is like the Irish, you know, health toast. There's a bagpipe scene. There's a Sweet Caroline Fenway Park scene. When he gets in a bar or prison brawl, you get Long Time by Boston on the soundtrack. It's just a mishmash. And he basically, Mark Wahlberg plays a good cop who gets sent away for beating up a bad cop because he almost kills the guy. And he comes out of prison and he sees that another cop is being framed. So he's going to investigate corruption, widespread corruption, involving not only certain cops, but a gang of machete-wielding bad guys who wield machetes only because it looks different in a movie than just have them have guns.
Just tell me what's really going on here.
Picture this. 30 cops, drug cartels, some big politicians all working together. When I was a cop, I was trying to take these guys down. But they framed me.
So what's the plan?
We're gonna blow this wide open. You want in?
No. You don't get the cold gun.
Hawk is the name of a man with a shotgun. Spencer does your taxes.
That was good. I'm going to let you have your little gun.
Now, this is going to be released on Netflix on Friday.
Yes. Yes. And Winston Duke is the sidekick here, who's in there with Mark Wahlberg. Avery Brooks played the sidekick back in the TV series. And it is very violent. But even though it deals with some serious issues, it's more of a comedy. It's an action comedy, which Mark Wahlberg does. His mentor is Alan Arkin, who I believe...
the best.
He's so great, but he's always looking off screen while delivering his lines. I'm fairly certain they had to have cue cards for him at this point, which is so much fun to watch because he clearly doesn't care. And they just... And then he's got... Mark Wahlberg has a... Post Malone, by the way. I know you're a big fan of all of his work. He's making his movie
tattoos
debut
especially.
In here. There's a character in there that plays his on and off girlfriend, Mark Wahlberg. And at one point, he asks her what she wants for lunch, and she says lobster. But she says, you know, four expletives around the lobster. You're going to give me a whole effing lobster. And then they literally, for the first time in my life, I've never seen this, they cut to the restaurant, and the giant graphic on the screen says lobster, L-O-B-S-T-A-H, letting us know that they did go out for the Lobster. And Sweet Emotion by Aerosmith is playing on soundtrack at that point.
There you go.
Another Boston
It's all
band.
Boston.
Three and a half stars for Spencer Confidential.
All right, we got less than a minute to talk about Onward, but you don't need that much time, do you?
Yeah, unfortunately, and we talked about it at length last week, and it's, to me, out of the 22 major Pixar films, it's the 22nd best or the least good. It's not horrible because it's Pixar, but it's a very strange story about two young boys who reanimate the bottom half of their dead dad and then drag him around like Weekend at Bernie's, trying to get the magic skull crystal thingy that'll give him the second part of dad's body from the waist up. And
well, I mean, but they had with a similar kind of a contraption for a script, Coco was a great success.
Yeah, which dealt with afterlife issues, and I thought, actually, I was stunned by the issues it got into. I thought it did it brilliantly. And you know, listen, Disney Pixar, there's almost always somebody's dead. You know, somebody's dad or mom is dead, and they deal with serious issues. This one, to me, it's just like the road trip they go on and everything. We've seen it before. The animation looks great. It'll do big business. You know, look, you want to take your kids out to the theater.
Well, we'll see. I mean, it's...
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it affects the box office.
Fascinating. And then watch the Dow take... Well, I don't want to predict. Richard Roper, thank you very much. He's reviewing the movies right here on The Rob Khan Show, which returns with Kim Gordon in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom in 2 minutes.
Inside Facebook, the tricks they use to get your attention. Our social media nerd reports after the 7:30 news. Talk to you in the morning.
Bob Surratt, Radio Chicago, WGN.
Oh, this music can mean only one thing. It can mean our own personal Blackhawk is standing by to talk to us about this winning streak. He's Connor Murphy, and he's a member of the...
Here come the Hawks, the mighty Blackhawks.
All right, now, Connor, when you go into broadcasting after your playing career is over, I want you to understand that's called hitting the post. When you stop talking right before the lyrics start. Very, very important thing, just in case you want to be, you know, a top 40 DJ. All right.
How many years did it take you to get that done?
That takes about 15 minutes to figure that out. There's really not a whole lot of training in this job. Okay, let us now talk about this winning streak, because this is very reminiscent to me, right? I mean, this is, you guys have so much talent, and now it seems like as soon as you were right on the edge, everything counts now. You got to basically get a point in every remaining game here to have a chance of climbing the teams that you got to climb. But you seem to be doing it. What's going on in the locker room?
I don't know. I think it's just you go through kind of ebbs and flows. We had a tough month in February, just having so many road games and kind of been able to, but unfortunately had to string together some losses on a couple of the trips. And then just getting home, it seemed like we found a little extra boost of energy and helped lately. And the other little key has just been working on our own game. I think there was stuff times when we just had a string of games where things just kind of pile on each other negatively. But lately we've just been kind of figuring out what's worked and really built on that.
Robin Leonard gets traded to Vegas as the trade deadline has passed. Corey Crawford, everyone kind of looks back at Crow and is like, okay, you're back to being the number one guy. Not that he wasn't, but it was more of a 50-50. He's been outstanding since that trade over the past few games.
Yeah, he has for sure. I don't know how much it affects goalies when they're not getting their net as often as they're used to, but it's got to have a bit of an effect just as far as comfort level and getting momentum to playing their game. So it's awesome to see Crow playing so well and playing so many games, and we definitely need him. And he's such a great leader for us and has been for so many years. It's it makes it feel like it meshes really well when he's in there.
Here's a little nugget tweeted out by the NHL Public Relations last night. Adam Boqvist and Kirby Dach each collected an assist. This is going to make everybody feel old, including you, Connor, who's just 26. As the Blackhawks opened the scoring last night, it marked the first time in NHL history that multiple players born in the 2000s factored on a goal. Both those guys, 20 and 19, both born in the 2000s factoring in a goal. You're only 26, Connor.
You're an old man now.
You're an old man, but those two, I think, you know, as we have the Taves and the Kane and you, these two guys really have a bright future with the Hawks.
Yeah, they do, and you see the confidence that they've gained as the years gone on. Dach seemed to be holding the puck and flying everywhere last night, and Boki's is gaining a lot of confidence, been playing good minutes with Dunks and learning off him. And last night, I was actually just really impressed with how he defended and seemed like the way his gaps were, and using his stick to defend and break up a lot of plays. That stuff as a D-man, it's harder to do as a smaller guy, and he's figuring out how to use his skating so well in those areas. But there's times as the year goes on, they make plays that you're not surprised with, and then you remember how young they are and think of how amazing that is and how rare it is, and there's not many guys in the league their age. And the fact that they're able to show what they have at this age, it's going to be amazing to see the players they continue to become.
Does seem like a moment of upswing here. And if you guys make the playoffs, God help the Western Conference, because if you run in with this level of confidence and speed and you know, getting to the puck and fighting and digging and all that, I mean, this is as good as the team has looked over the last couple of games all season. So you just got to keep it going. You got home cooking. Can I just ask you that you mentioned that thing about being on the road? Now, the Hawks have had a better road record than they've had a home record this year. But February was brutal because there were only three games at home in February. Well, it was 11 on the road, I think. And when you're doing that, it's the opposite now in March. In March, you're going to be home most of the time. But when you're on the road that long, what's the thing that really drags you? What's the thing that causes the biggest amount of problems?
I think the two things would be the late nights and just being in hotels, and they put us up in amazing hotels, but just for whatever reason, just seems stuffy and you wake up with a little bit less energy. But a lot of those trips, we were flying around Western Canada and then back through to Central, and it seemed like we'd get into a city after 2 a.m. almost every game. So just over time, there's ways you can keep up with it by staying on it with certain recovery ways, obviously just getting sleep when you can and all that. But I do think after a while, when you have so many late flights and being in so many different cities and hotels, it ends up taking a bit of energy out of you. But I mean, that's just all one big excuse. I think every team deals with tough trips and at tough times of the season. So you just have to find a way. This time of year, there's a lot of times when you're not going to be feeling your best, and what you feel doesn't matter. You have to perform there's no excuse. I mean, you look in the playoffs at teams, and I think you'd ask every team, they'd say the same thing, that no one felt their best, but a lot of teams seem to play their best. So it's amazing. It's a mental game, and it's whoever can push the hardest.
Got it. Connor Murphy, you're our favorite. You're still our favorite. And go out there and let's get to the playoffs, Connor Murphy.
Yeah. One at a time. One win at a time.
All right. There you go. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
All right. Our own personal Blackhawk, Connor Murphy, right there. Let's check in now with Kim Gordon. She'll tell us what's happening she tells us about what's happening in the weather, and then Kevin with the sports, and then Lauren with the traffic. I'm just getting used to this. All right, Eric Rung from WGN-TV News is standing by. And, Eric, we want to talk to you. You're doing Chicago coronavirus tonight for Channel 9. And the question that I have is the announcement by the Chicago Public Schools today that if any kid presents themselves as sick, you know, runny nose, they come in, I got a sore throat or headache or whatever it is, they're sending them right home. Now, how in the hell are they going to do that? Because parents work.
Yeah, well, I mean, the advice that, you know, the public health departments and CDC have been given to us since this whole thing ever came up was, you know, if you feel sick, you should stay home anyway. I see what you're saying exactly. There's got to be some case-by-case basis. It would be very hard for me to believe that they're just have this zero-tolerance kind of thing. And you know, you have a runny nose, you sneeze once, you're going to be sent home.
Well, wait, Eric, hold on. Before you try to paint this rosy, you've seen all the videos of, like, security guards putting 8-year-olds in cells, right? I mean, it's like, there are some people who are not quite as good at their job as others than in this system.
Well, yes, and I think that sadly has been proven time and time again. But again, you know, even if they are taking these precautions or putting out this extra hand sanitizer, they're taking extra precautions of sanitizing the schools. The policy in and of itself is a policy, but you're right. It's unworkable. Anybody that sneezes is going to be sent home. And that's just not possible. I mean, the real goal here is to really hammer it home to parents that if your child is showing any symptoms of like a fever or even a bad cold, that they need to stay home. And that goes for us, too. I mean, if we have a fever or a cough or a sneeze, we should stay home, too. And that's the real message that's coming out.
Right. And which is hard on businesses, right, when you have these many people that are just freaked out. We know of a company here, one of our extended family members on the Rokan Show works for a company that is on Friday, they're being told everybody has to work from home because they're going to clean the office, they're going to do something, you know, like a big scrub. And the strangest part of this is that they told the workers, we're not sure, we think you're going to come back on Monday, but you can take your office chair home with you. Now, I don't know what you need an office chair for at your home. I don't understand how that works. Because I basically just be working off your laptop at home anyway. I don't think you need an office chair.
I don't know why you need your chair.
I don't know. Like it to put up to your dining room table?
You're going
to
be sitting in your boxers and a t-shirt doing that.
Right. I do everything from my bed now. Because you do it on the phone. You can lie there. I'm either in my bed or standing here. There's only two ways to go about this. I don't think it's very good for my condition. All right. Well, this is going to be a very interesting period of time. Because there's a whole other set of closures and changes and everything that are happening here. The Northwestern has canceled its annual dance marathon, which was going to be 6th through the 8th. The Fight for Air Climb, which we had those people on, the firefighters and all the people who are going to be doing that on Sunday, that has been canceled at Presidential Towers. Oracle has canceled an upcoming conference expected to bring 5,500 people here to the city from McCormick Place. The International Houseware Show, as we learned earlier this week, has canceled. The Inspired Home Show, scheduled also for March, expected to generate $77 million, has also been canceled. It's like we're seeing this slowdown, and there's no way this doesn't end up affecting the economy overall.
It's definitely going to have a huge impact on the economy. It already is here in the city. And, of course, the longer it goes on, the more it's going to impact, obviously, the economy globally, but also nationally. And it's all going to come down to trickle down to locally as well. I did talk to a professor here at Northwestern today, and he said, you know, one of the good signs is, I guess if you can find this anyway, is he believes, he was a professor of finance, that the kind of the virus and the economy has now kind of found a balance in China. Now, of course, there's a lot of questions that are still going on as far as do we have all the information, that kind of thing, too. But he said that is a little encouraging that we're not seeing it play out another month and another month and another month in China. Of course, here in the United States, we are still trying to get a handle on it, and it's still popping up cases left and right.
And I hate to be raining on your parade, but Eric Rung, I don't believe anything that's coming out of China. And as a matter of fact, that some of these press conferences with health officials have been talking about the fact that the numbers really don't add up in China based on the number of people dead versus the number of people they reported having had it, because it's a very consistent mortality rate, morbidity rate. So there's no sense that we're really going to get a true answer out of them for years to come, but we'll see. All right, Eric Rung, WGN-TV News. He's on the coronavirus beat. Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time.
You got it. Nice talking with you.
There he goes, Eric Rung. Oh, man. I don't know. I'm blissfully not paying attention to this. And that is so the opposite of who I am. I am not being loyal to my own insanity here.
Even you have coronavirus exhaustion.
I do.
It's just too hard to keep up, to be honest.
I have been, I've had something for 2 weeks, and I don't care anymore. I'm assuming it's not coronavirus, because I'm still breathing.
Yeah, you're not dead, so that's big.
But I've had like a cold for 2 weeks, maybe it is. I don't know. And how would I even know? I'm not running a fever.
Well, the rest of us would probably be sick.
Maybe, but you're in a box. You guys are in boxes.
Yeah, but it's so contagious.
We don't see each other or touch each other.
But
yeah, that's
so
true.
Contagious.
Surratt would be getting it by now. That's the point. That's a good point.
That's what I'm saying. We would all have it.
Where's Justin tonight? Is Justin here? If he's not here, then we'll know that maybe I am contagious.
Well, Northwestern basketball.
Oh, yeah.
That's not till 7:45.
Yeah, and he comes in and does 20 minutes. He likes it. He told me that. I think that there is going to be a moment where I get it. This is a potentially very dangerous virus, especially for people who are immunocompromised. They already have
lung problems or they have heart conditions, all of those things, pre-existing conditions, right? People undergoing chemotherapy or immunosuppression therapy of any type. Very, very, very bad. I understand. And I don't want to make any light of it. And it's worse, and it does have a mortality rate that is far exceeds that of the seasonal flu. But at the end of the day, they're saying 80% of people won't even realize that they've got it or think they have a cold. So how do you stop that from spreading? How do you stop everybody on the planet Earth from at some point encountering it? And when you look at the map of places that are affected, it's pretty fascinating because there are entire, at least not reported, there are entire swaths of Asia and Africa. There's only two countries in Africa, and there are a lot of countries in Africa that have reported this. So, you know, you start to wonder about it. And, you know, in Africa, they can have pandemics in Africa. That happens. So we'll just have to see. I don't think we really know enough. Although I was heartened by the way that the press conference, the Pence press conference today, he's doing one of these every day, was handled. And Dr. Anthony Fauci, that's the guy right there. I want him for president of the United States or something. I don't know. What can we do with him? Make him king? I like that. He makes me feel very comfortable. Like he's the guy that I trust in all of this. All right. We have got the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming your way in 2 minutes.